Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's a recorded phone call from inside the Cuyahoga County Jail. Recorded. Monitored. The kind of call every inmate knows is being listened to. Almost everybody. Where Mackenzie Shirilla tells her mother she does not need to be rehabilitated. She has been convicted of killing two people. Dominic Russo, 20 years old. Davian Flanagan, 19. Both pronounced dead at the scene after Mackenzie drove her Toyota Camry into a brick building at 100 miles an hour, foot to the floor. Without ever touching a brake, a judge looked at the evidence and called her actions controlled, methodical, deliberate, intentional, and purposeful. A judge said she had a mission, and she executed it with precision. The mission was death. And look, whether or not that's the mission or not, on jailhouse phone calls days after the conversation, Mackenzie Shirilla tells her mother that rehabilitation is just not for her. And mom, rather than like, look, you know, maybe you don't feel that way, but you gotta go along with this so you can get out and you can be free someday. And, you know, giving advice that would actually be helpful, not just reaffirming to herself that she's a good mother and did everything right and her daughter's a little angel and that she's being persecuted. You know, rather than tamper that down for half a second, for the benefit of her daughter, playing the long game, not immediate gratification game, which seems to be the only game these fucking idiots know how to play. She doesn't say any of this. She's like, hey, honey, just go along with it. Just go along with the program. Maybe you'll get something out of it. Just do it. Just take a breath. No. Mom agrees. Mom agreed. You don't need that. I'm paraphrasing. Natalie Shirley tells her daughter that prison programs are meant for people that have been convicted of crimes like actual criminals, not Mackenzie, because Mackenzie can't possibly be an actual criminal. She only killed two people, you fucking nimrods. Mackenzie's different. Mackenzie had a car accident. That's the phrase that Natalie uses. This is the framework the Shirilla family has built around this conviction, and it has not moved one inch since the day the verdict came down. And that exchange, a convicted killer saying she does not need to change, and her mother confirming it on a line she knows is being recorded, tells you everything you need to know about why Mackenzie Shirilla is the way she is, why she will remain the way she is, and why absolutely nothing she has done since entering the Ohio Reformatory for Women should surprise a single person paying attention. Welcome to the program. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Quick context for anyone just coming into this. July 31st, 2022, Strongville, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland. Mackenzie Shirilla, 17 at the time, is behind the wheel of a 2018 Toyota Camry in the early morning hours. Dominic Russo is in the passenger seat. That's her boyfriend. Davion Flanagan, a friend, in the back. Surveillance footage shows the car accelerating down the dead-end road. in a corporate park on a road McKenzie did not routinely use but had visited days earlier and slamming into a brick wall of a building at roughly 100 miles per hour. The vehicle's event data recorder confirmed the accelerator was pressed full capacity. In the moments before the impact, the brake never applied. No mechanical failure was found. Russo and Flanagan were pronounced dead at the scene. McKenzie miraculously survived. That sounds familiar. Sounds like a Netflix doc. It is. It's called The Crash. In case you'd like to fully get yourself up to speed on it, that's why everybody's talking about this right now. She was arrested in November of 22 and convicted in a bench trial. In August of 2023, on all 12 charges, including four counts of murder, Judge Nancy Margaret Russo, no relation to the victim, sentenced her to two concurrent terms of 15 years to life. She is currently incarcerated at the Ohio Reformatory for Women in Marysville, Ohio. She will not be eligible for parole until October of 2037. And if that sounds like a long ways away, it's not. It's about 10 years. I know. For those of us of a certain age growing up, like 2037, like that's way in the future. Yeah, it's not. The Netflix documentary, The Crash, released in May of 2026, put McKenzie back in the national conversation. She sat for her first on-camera interview from prison. She maintained her innocence. She said she does not remember the crash. She blamed a blood pressure condition called POTS. But what has come out since that documentary, the prison phone calls, the conduct reports, the public statements from her parents, has done more to reveal who McKenzie Schirilla actually is than any documentary ever could. It's like so many crimes, so much damage is done after the fact. And McKenzie's idiotic parents don't know when to shut the fuck up. There is nothing they are saying or doing that is helping her case. And I'm not here to say, and I'm not even saying she did it on purpose. She didn't do it on purpose. I'm just saying the optics of this, if your interest is in your daughter being free at some point in your lifetime, then shut the fuck up. All you're doing, all this noise, all this energy you're putting into the environment, it's all for one purpose, your own ego. You know it. I know it. Some of the folks out there, you got them kind of bamboozled. Maybe you're not even aware of it. But I'll tell you what. All you're doing is looking for self-affirmations that you've done the right thing, that your parenting was right, that you're the victim. And anybody who says otherwise, you just shut out and you don't care about them. And that's, you just dismiss. You just want people to tell you she's innocent. This couldn't. Okay, great. You can believe that all you want. But when it comes to a parole hearing in about 11 years from now, the one thing they're going to want to hear is remorse. They're going to want to hear accountability. They're going to hear someone who took very seriously the actions that they participated in and the consequences for those actions has viscerally, physically, mentally, emotionally affected and changed them. Every single goddamn thing you are doing and communicating with your daughter on tape, you fucking idiot, is actively hurting that. If that's your goal, you are pouring gasoline onto a fire that is not going to help you get there. It's a long game, and it's the only game you got left to play. Just saying. Unless, I don't know, maybe you're happy. Maybe you're happy your little monster of a daughter is not in the house. You're breathing easy. You don't have to, like, constantly be on eggshells wondering what crazy, dumb thing is she going to do next that could possibly implicate us in a crime. Maybe it is easier. It probably is. I would imagine you two are probably sitting back at night on your porch. He's smoking his weed. And I'm not against, fine with that. I don't care. I smoke weed too. You're having your glass of Chardonnay or whatever. Going, you know, it's kind of peaceful around here these days, isn't it? I wonder why that is. I know, your daughter's in prison. So, are you actively trying to keep her locked away for the rest of your guys' life? Look, I get it. If that was my daughter, I might too. I might be like, let's see, what do I got left? 40-some years, maybe? If we can just keep that parole date to like 40-ish years from now. No, honey, we're campaigning for you on the outside here. We got you. And she's none the wiser because she's a product of your stupidity. I don't know. It does make you question folks' motives when they're actively working against their own best interests. But people all the time work against their own best interests with a big old smile on their face, oftentimes at the ballot box. Is this just another version of that? Sherrilla actually, getting back into our conversation here, by the way. The prison phone calls, the conduct reports, the public statements from her parents. Send more to reveal about who Mackenzie Sherrilla actually is more than the documentary ever could. Because this is not a performance for a camera crew. This is who she is when she thinks she is only talking to people who will never hold her accountable. I don't know that she understands being held accountable because she's never been held accountable. Mackenzie Sherrilla has accumulated 36 prison conduct reports in less than 3 years while behind bars. Just had a really interesting conversation with attorney Eric Faddis about this on the channel. And I said, is that normal? Is that common for someone, and especially a young person going in from the outside world that doesn't have consequences, doesn't have guardrails up, to be going in and violating things at nauseam at that level? Because to me, I'm like, maybe that's normal. I don't know. And like, maybe you kind of chill down a little bit as you're in there a little bit. No, not normal at all. Remember, she was found guilty. On those four counts of the actual crime, of the murder. On this, in prison, 36 prison conduct violations, 32 of them found guilty on. When she first arrived at Ohio Reformatory for Women in August of 23, she went months without a single citation. That changed in May of 24, when she was cited for being out of place. I don't know what that means, but from there, it was a steady and escalating stream of institutional defiance. She was found with medication prescribed to another inmate. She admitted the medication was not hers. She admitted using it. Staff found a personal photograph in her cell depicting drug use. Because, yeah, when you're in prison, let's take photos of us doing drugs. She was caught altering prison-issued clothing on at least three separate occasions, dress code violations that eventually led to the conduct citation and 2 weeks in restrictive housing. Unauthorized images were also found concealed in her cell. She was cited for creating disturbances within the institution, cited for talking during count in her most recent guilty finding, refusing to carry out a work assignment. You know, because those are for the real inmates. And then there are the video visits. In September of 25, according to prison records, staff documented what they described as multiple violations of institutional visitation rules during McKenzie's video calls. Seven visits between McKenzie and a single visitor were flagged for conduct that violated institutional policy. The result was video visit restrictions for 60 days. She pled guilty to unauthorized use of electronic devices and violation of visitation rules. And here is what matters about all of this. These are not the stumbles of someone adjusting to life inside. These are not the mistakes of a young woman struggling with the reality of incarceration. These are the choices of someone who has never, in her entire life, been told by anyone who mattered to her. No. Former inmate named Kat Crowder, who served approximately 6 months alongside McKenzie at Ohio Reformatory for Women, told News Nation that Shirilla showed no remorse for what happened. Crowder compared her to the character Regina George in the movie Mean Girls. The way she carried herself, the way she did her makeup every day as if she were going to the club, the way she positioned herself socially inside the facility, that tracks. Because McKenzie Shirilla has never operated in a world where consequences are real and permanent. She's operated in a world where consequences are things that happen to other people. The phone calls are where you hear it most clearly. Not filtered through a Netflix edit. Not mediated by a defense attorney. Her own voice, unrecorded lines she knows are being monitored, saying exactly who she is, despite knowing, hey, this is being recorded. This might be used against you if you put two thoughts together. In one call obtained by the U.S. Sun, she begs her mother for an iPad. Please, please, please. Natalie tries calling the prison on her behalf and is told that doing so would constitute special treatment. In another call obtained by TMZ, McKenzie complains about boredom. She groans about how slowly time passes. She does not have access to her commissary. She has one book and doesn't want to read it again. Her mother suggests she asks about mopping or sweeping to pass time. McKenzie says they'll not let her have a job. At least that's what she's heard. She complains about the food. She wakes up throughout the night. She wants to know what the media is saying about her. When her mother tells her the story is only an online coverage and has not made television, McKenzie reportedly stops responding. In another call, she brings up the story of a man who was arrested for murder and became a model because people liked his mugshot. Her mother laughs. Natalie tells her she remembers the guy. McKenzie goes on to say the man went on to act in a movie. See, now he was arrested for murder. He probably didn't do anything, Natalie responds. That's messed up. A woman whose daughter was convicted of killing two people laughing about a murder arrest that launched a modeling career on a recorded prison line. In a call obtained by TMZ, McKenzie and Natalie trash the town of Strongville, you know, where they live. McKenzie calls the residents sad and depressing. Natalie, in her infinite motherly wisdom, backs her up, saying neighbors are spreading rumors about their home and insisting that everybody's making shit up. The community that lost two of its young people in a crash, a judge called a mission of death. And the Shirilla family's response is that the town is pathetic for talking about it. In a call with a friend, McKenzie refers to herself as the third victim of the crash. They're trying to make it seem something that it's not, she says. I didn't do this on purpose. I got in a car accident. And in a call obtained by TMZ, she announces her post-prison plans. She's going to be a life coach. Sign me up. I'm going to be a life coach and stuff, she tells her mother. I'm just going to be everything. I'm going to do everything. A life coach. A woman convicted of killing two people at 100 miles per hour who's racked up, so far, 36 conduct violations in state prison and refuses to acknowledge what she did, wants to coach other people on how to live their lives. You couldn't make this up. You couldn't make this up. Like, you'd be like, people aren't that stupid. Even prisoners, you want to bet? Meet the Shirillas. None of this is aberrant behavior. That is the point. This is the same person she was before the crash. On July 17th of 2022, 2 weeks before she killed Dominic Russo and Davion Flanagan, McKenzie was driving in Interstate 71 with Russo in the car. They got into an argument. According to court filings, a friend of Russo's was on the phone with him when he heard McKenzie say, "I will crash this car right now." Russo called his mother and asked to be picked up. The friend drove out to get him. When he arrived, he reportedly told McKenzie, he reportedly found McKenzie striking Russo with both hands. That same month, according to prosecutors, Russo's phone captured recordings of McKenzie reportedly degrading him, threatening him, and damaging his property. She reportedly threatened to key his car. She reportedly threatened to break the handle off a door after he refused to let her in his home. And after the crash, after Dominic and Davian were dead, she attended a concert in a wheelchair. She posted a TikTok video with the caption, "I'm just one of those girls that can do a lot of drugs and not die." She performed in a Halloween dance routine on TikTok dressed as what appeared to be a corpse. She posted more than a dozen times on Russo's online obituary, calling him her soulmate and her love of my life. The prosecutor at her sentencing described it as a shocking lack of remorse, but it was not a lack of remorse. It was a lack of awareness. That remorse was even something anyone expected from her. There is a difference, and it matters. And this is an interesting case, because I do believe there is remorse in McKenzie. I do. I mean, just watch the video of her at the cemetery with one of the parents. I believe it was Davion's father. I could be off, but it was one of the parents. And they're doing the pendulum thing, and there's honest grief there. There's honest sadness there. This is an empty shell of a human being raised by two people who, in my opinion, are utterly clueless. I think unto themselves and unto anyone else. And when you're raised by shells, and you are a shell, I don't know how you expect a lot more. Now, certainly a lot of people come from worse and do better, but they are the exception to the rule. A lot of people that come from shells of parents end up being shells of people too. A lot of them don't go on to murder other people or get into horrible, horrible accidents like this or whatever you want to call it. But there's a lot more of McKenzies out there in the world than there are the ones that break through and succeed. And if you are someone who broke through and succeeded, wonderful. That's amazing. But there's a lot of people who sulk in their own misery. And this seems like a people who enjoy their share of sulking. McKenzie Schirilla did not raise herself. Natalie Schirilla, on a recorded prison phone call released by Strongville Police, listens to her daughter push back on the victim impact statement from the Russo family. The family of the young man McKenzie killed. McKenzie takes issue with what Angelo Russo, Dominic's brother, said in court. Natalie's response, her mom, according to the audio obtained by Cleveland 19 News. "I mean, the military? Are you for real?" Reportedly mocking Angelo's reference to his own service. And then, "They're just evil people, baby. I'm sorry. Don't think on it. Do not think on it anymore." Evil. That's what Natalie Schirilla calls the family of the man her daughter killed. Evil. Because they stood in a courtroom and told a judge what they lost. Angelo Russo talked about his brother. And Natalie Schirilla's response was to dismiss the entire statement as strategy. "Are you for real?" Yeah, they're for real. Everyone out here in the ether is. You're the only one who's not. According to the audio, she told McKenzie that Angelo said what he said so the judge would see him as a respectable young man. and that the perceived calculation made her own sympathy vanish. Angelo's statement literally made my tears stop, Natalie said. They got all sucked right back up. Her own tears. A grieving brother spoke about the person he lost, and the mother of the woman who killed him felt empathy shut off. Not because of what Angelo said, but because she read it as a performance designed to hurt her daughter. Magical thinking people. In another call, according to reporting from Oxygen, Natalie categorizes her daughter's conviction as fundamentally different from real murder. She argues that vehicular cases should not be in the same category as people who kill with guns and knives. He doesn't fall in the same category of actual murderers, she says, referencing another vehicular case. The thorough line is always the same. Mackenzie is not like those people. And they just keep looking for validation outside in other cases to further build up their own delusion. That's what's going on here. Mackenzie is not a criminal. Mackenzie had a car accident, and the system is doing this to her. It's not a consequence for her actions. It's something else, always. You ever wonder how, like, narcissists live and how they survive and how they continue to get up day to day and get in cars and go to work and function? That's how. You just reframe everything a little bit, and suddenly nothing's your fault. How do they live with themselves? That's how they live with themselves. That right there is how they live with themselves, because that's how their brains work. This is a perfect storm of a, in my opinion, narcissistic cluster B family. Steve Shirilla, Mackenzie's father, an art and digital media teacher at Mary Queen of Peace School in Cleveland, who's on administrative leave, actually now has been officially his contract not renewed, but he said, I wouldn't have signed anyway. I know you are, but what am I? Basically, I would have signed anyway. They showed me who they were. Oh, did they? I think it's more the other. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, so if I'm slightly off on this, I do apologize. But it was striking. It was the diocese has shown their true colors. Really, Steve? The diocese has shown their true colors? Well, number one, the Catholic Church has shown its true colors of how much they give a shit about children a long time ago. And you still chose to participate there. So there's that. But let's take that out of the equation. In this, let's assume everything's on the up and up at your school. They're the ones who showed their true colors? Seriously? 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 They're the ones who showed their true colors. Well, you went on a national television on a documentary talking about how high you like to get, how you don't care that your underage minor daughter is toking it up at the house and you're totally cool with it. And that when she's having issues at school and the school is saying she's telling teachers to F off and be disrespectful and the little monstrous see you next Tuesday that she is. Your response is to go and she looked me in the eye and I know my daughter. We walked right out of there. We showed them. She went to the parking lot and we showed them, didn't we? Aren't I a cool dad? You fucking moron. Steve Shirilla. Again, my opinion, allegedly. Insert that in front of everything. It's fucking dope. Good luck getting a job anywhere else. I'm sure, like I said, I made a comment on X the other day. You'll make a great bud tender, Steve. I'm sure, I don't know if it's legal there. I can't imagine that's going to be a lot of supporters in the pot shop. There might be a lot of people there. I don't know that you're going to really get more employment, Steve. I don't know. You'll probably find something. OnlyFans, sell your feet. Mackenzie's father, an art and digital media teacher at Mary Queen of Peace School in Cleveland. Now administrative leave, but now you know, the contract's not there. After the school cited concerns about poor judgment in the wake of the Netflix documentary, maintains his daughter's innocence publicly. In May 25, an interview with WKYC, Steve reportedly said, show me one piece of evidence, one, that says she did this on purpose. Show it to me. Then she's right where she belongs. And she's guilty of it. But there isn't any. That's the quote. Basically saying there's no. And look, Steve, I happen to agree with you. There really isn't any evidence that points out that this was murder. Some may disagree, and everyone's entitled to their opinion. Murder, manslaughter, absolute horrible choices, someone who doesn't understand consequences, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. That's not even really the argument anymore. She's away for it. You can stop litigating that. Now it's about showing empathy and regard for the law and regard for what she did and the lives that she took, most importantly. And you're doing nothing of that. And you're not helping her do that. You're hindering her from doing that. But again, I don't think this is about her for him. This is about him validating his own poor parenting choices and the results which occurred from being that passive, that lenient. How could something this tragic, this chaotic, this heartbreaking, this horrible happen out of being a permissive, cool dad? This is exactly what happens out of being that permissive, this lenient of a cool dad. He appeared on the podcast True Crime this week and argued that if McKenzie had wanted to kill Russo, Flanagan would never have been in the car. So I guess she would have a game plan then. It's an interesting way of framing it. Like, well, if she really did want to do it, she just wouldn't kill her friend too. Something happened in that car, he said. No one's ever going to know. She's innocent of the charges they put upon her. Again, maybe so. She was behind the wheel. She did drive that car. She even admits that. What exactly happened? Yes, maybe we will never know. It's the accountability part that everyone's having the problem with, dipshit. It's the constantly making excuses part that everybody's having a problem with. And the character of your daughter, that's really what everybody is having the problem with. And then there's the coded language. During the trial, prosecutors hired a team to decode phone calls between McKenzie and Natalie in which the two communicated using a private language, which is always great before trial. Inserting syllables into words to obscure what they were saying on monitored lines. In one of those decoded calls, according to evidence presented at trial, McKenzie allegedly asked her mother, "Can we tell the police I had a seizure?" That's not a family supporting a daughter through the legal process. That's a family workshopping a cover story on a recorded line. That is the ecosystem. That is the closed loop. That's how stupid these people are. Let's talk in pig Latin. And no one will figure it out. McKenzie says she does not need rehabilitation, and her mother confirms it. McKenzie says the Russo family is lying, and her mother calls them evil. McKenzie says something fabricated for the police, and her mother is the one she asks. Steve goes on a podcast and argues his daughter's innocence, while a judge's words, controlled, methodical, deliberate, intentional, and purposeful, sit in the public record. No one in McKenzie Shirilla's orbit has ever said the thing she needs to hear. You did something terrible. You need to face it. You need to change. Not once from either parent. Not from anyone she trusts. The argument here is not that McKenzie Shirilla is a monster and people should be outraged. The argument is that people should stop being surprised. Every headline about another private visitation, another defiant phone call, another entitled demand from behind bars is treated as if it's new information. It is not. It is the same information. It was there before the crash. In the threats and the violence and the entitlement and the TikTok persona. It was there during the trial. And the corpse costume and the obituary posts and the coded phone calls. It's there now. And the 36 violations and the third victim identity. And the family insisting she's not a real criminal. Entrenched. Enmeshed. That's the family system. When the personality structure is this rigid, when every meaningful relationship in a person's life reinforces the distortion instead of challenging it, a la Adelson's, the person does not change. They do not wake up one morning and see the light. They don't sit with the weight of what they did and arrive at accountability. No, they spin in circles. They spin outward, further from reality with every rotation, and they take down anyone unfortunate enough to be in their proximity. Two people died because they were in proximity to Mackenzie Shirilla on a July morning. Family was destroyed, and Mackenzie Shirilla is on the phone from prison, asking for her iPad, complaining about the food, calling the town that lost two of its children, sad and depressing. As long as the people around her keep telling her she is the victim, she will keep believing it. As long as no one in her life holds her accountable, not legally, she's in prison. The legal system did its job. But emotionally, psychologically, in a way that actually changes how a person understands themselves and what they have done, she will remain exactly who she is. The same entitlement, the same absence of empathy, the same refusal to sit in front of discomfort. And sit in the discomfort of what happened on that road. The same mother on the other end of the phone telling her the grieving family is evil, telling her she's not like those other criminals, telling her not to think about it. And maybe that is the final uncomfortable truth about Mackenzie Shirilla. The system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It is keeping someone who shows zero capacity for change away from the people she would harm next. Not because the system is cruel, because the pathology is real. And no one who should have intervened before the crash, during the trial, from the other end of the prison phone ever did. No one ever held the mirror up. No one ever said the word no and meant it. Dominic Russo's father, Frank, said something after sentencing that stayed with me. He said he wanted Mackenzie to get help. She's just a kid, he said. She did a damn stupid thing. He didn't want her life destroyed. He asked for mercy. From a place of grief most of us will never understand. Thank God. That was grace from a man who buried his son. Years later, Mackenzie Shirilla is on a recorded line, and her mother is calling the man's family evil. That is who Mackenzie is. It was always who she was. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We'll continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go to another case that has been huge this week. Mackenzie Shirilla never talked to police. She never testified. The case that put her away for two murders was built on evidence, surveillance footage, the car's own data recorder, a digital trail of threats and what investigators pieced together after the crash. The question that runs underneath all of this is, how do you prove a murder when the weapon is a car and the defendant never says a word about wanting to kill her boyfriend or her friend. Joining us to discuss, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI Special Agent, host of Break the Case, available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Let's start here. Mackenzie never talked to police, never testified. The whole case was circumstantial. How do you prove someone intended to kill when they never say a single word about what actually happened? Obviously, it worked. The judge said, yeah, we knew what your intent was. But was that the right outcome? We've talked to everybody this week about this now. Jen, I'm curious to get your reaction. It's your turn to take the bat from Negan and take a swing at Mackenzie Schirilla exactly how you would like.
All
the
right.
Pinata is yours.
When you're talking about cases, when you go in as a case agent, you should never think, oh, I'm going to rely on getting a confession or rely on what they're going to say. The way to go into a case is saying, listen, I need to look at all of this evidence objectively, see what is out there, and piece together a case to your puzzle that doesn't involve a confession. Because then if you get everything put together, that's when you go and talk to the person. That's when you have everything on the board that you can hopefully convince them it's in their best interest to talk to you about what happened. In this case, she was smart, never said anything. But come on, this evidence is overwhelming. Her digital trail is obnoxious. They have the car. She's done.
I like that digital trail is obnoxious. And so the debate all week, Jen, and so this is what we'd love you to weigh in on. So here's the debate. There is no debate that she was the result, her actions resulted in the death of two people.
Irrefutable.
You know, irrefutable. That's the word I circled for. Thanks, Tony. So irrefutable that's what her actions caused. What we keep going back and forth on all week is what was her intent? Because, again, we keep going to that intent thing. The judge says her intent was to kill her friends. Again, kind of paraphrasing there. And some of us are saying, well, that doesn't quite fit the data sets that we're getting on this, because we don't see her being suicidal. We don't see her intentionally wanting to murder someone. Although, because she's a stupid narcissist and she's using the vehicle as a fear lever of manipulation, like she's already done before, that her intent was to manipulate people's compliance and they happen to die, including almost herself. And so I guess that's what we're kind of looking at, is where do you line on that from what you're seeing from your experience? Do you think the intent was to murder, or is the intent to use fear and they died because of her stupidity?
I think the intent was to murder. I agree with this judge on this. Look at what we have before us. Two dead people.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. That's where I lie on it. You don't race a car at humans and not think they're going to die unless you just literally don't understand the outcomes of something like that.
And that's where I think it lands.
A lot. And that's where we're going back and forth. Yeah,
did she understand? Just like some idiot that doesn't understand the power of a weapon, of a gun, if you will. You know. Obviously, there are certain things you do and don't do with a weapon, loaded or not. You take it seriously. There's idiots out there who don't understand that wave them around, that do stupid shit. And then sometimes, oh, surprise, that's a loaded weapon, and you thought it wasn't, and it fires and it shoots somebody. Now, because they were stupid and waving it around doesn't mean that they intended to murder somebody, but the result of their stupidity and their actions and their narcissism and all of that resulted in this. Is this similar to that? How is this different than that, I guess? In your opinion, from the evidence, what stands out to you, Jen, that makes you say, just like the judge did, that this is beyond just recklessness or stupidity? What's landed with you?
I think what's landed with me is the obvious nature of she would understand what a car would do. We're not talking about a three-year-old looking up and not understanding the breadth of force of a vehicle. So I just do not buy anyone who murders people with a car saying, oh, geez, I have no idea that could do that.
Do you think
plan as being logical.
Do you think she went into it with the intent of killing herself? Or do you think the narcissism, the ego, didn't even consider that, hey, you might die as well?
You know, I think when people do these types of crimes, that they are more focused on the intent to kill than they are what could happen to them in these particular cases. And in this case, that's how I see it. I see that her decision did not keep into account what could happen to her, the extent of what could happen to her.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was then, and I can see that if she's so blinded by rage and so blinded in the moment, and that's why I guess where my question is going, do you think this was then premeditated, that she had an intent beforehand to kill them, or was she caught up in the moment?
I think that she premeditated. In other words, I think that this is something she probably thought about way before this, maybe not in this particular way, but I think the rage and the hate that somebody experiences, it goes in and out. They keep thinking about it, and then an opportunity presents.
And what do you think then about the reactions that, again, the only data we really have is how Netflix edited it. So we're kind of limited in that cut that we had. So we had two things that stood out to me, which were data points when assessing this as well, was how the parents shared her reaction when finding about Dom being murdered, killed, as well as his friend and her friends in the back seat. And it seemed to be, it was an interesting reaction. And then you also then had her with the bracelets on that they wanted to remove from her when she went to jail. Do you think that was because she was making a show? Was it because she had empathy about it? I mean, how do you think her reactions when finding out basically about them being dead, were they genuine, insincere, cinematic in any way?
Well, definitely cinematic. But having said that, there are some people that actually, once everything happens, the gravity of the situation, they actually do have some regret. And I think that this could be a combination of possibly some regret, but mostly a show.
The parents have been making headlines all week. I know you've seen it. I've seen it. We've all seen it. We've all been subject to the parents of Mackenzie Shirilla's verbal diarrhea on the internet over the last couple of weeks here. Do the parents, I mean, it's a very broad question. I don't really know the mechanism to which it would be handled, but do the parents bear responsibility in any way, shape, or form for what their daughter's actions were?
I don't think so in this case.
No.
Nope. I can't see it. I can't see the connect.
Just
no crumblies there, right?
Yeah, I mean, because that's the interesting thing. I don't see the connect other than just really irresponsible parenting. I mean, is this just simply a look into a world of, well, here's how the sausage is made. When you make it that way, when you follow this recipe, this is what you get. Surprise, surprise. What's your reaction to so many folks when they see Mackenzie's reaction from prison? They look at it as, oh, she's dismissive or she's not taking this seriously. We've heard some of the phone calls between her and her mother. What's been your reaction to the communications between the parents and Mackenzie from behind bars that we've been privy to?
You know, I really believe that people like Mackenzie, she had in her mind what is going to happen once I'm behind bars. In other words, this isn't just like you're thrown into something and you have to react. This is something she had imagined in her mind. What was she going to act like? What was the relationship going to be like with the parents, these conversations and everything? So I guess, I don't know, to sum it up, she was ready for it and we're seeing Mackenzie. I don't think there's anything further beyond that.
That's really interesting. So I hadn't considered that aspect of it. So do you believe it was premeditated so much from her standpoint that actually she was actually thinking about what life in prison would be like, because you think she was playing that tape forward enough that she was anticipating it?
I do. Really do. I think that is what makes sense to me in terms of a lot of these people. They know that when they're up for these kinds of criminal charges, they've thought about it over and over and over again. Just think with anything in our lives, something that is huge, whatever that might be, that could be our future, how you think about it, even like a move, right? Okay, whatever. And I think that that was played out for her.
So in order to do that, so she has the cognizant ability to kind of play that tape forward to plan what life in prison is going to be like from your perspective after the actions of this take place. What do you think is hindering her from being able to plan forward to her parole hearing where she has got 36 violations against her, 32 are found? In other words, for as much planning as she seems to have done, she's really sucking at it right now if she ever wants to get out.
Well, I don't think she cares. I mean, she didn't care whether she killed two people. Why does she care about these violations? In other words, I don't think that that's in her recipe. I think she's the type of person that does everything for the moment, does things the way she wants, and then the repercussions she'll have to face. But I think it's more important to her that she live and does the things she wants to do. I mean, how many times have we come across these personalities?
Yeah.
Well, yesterday we were calling her Corey Richens, one of the training bras. What is what Mark Fryer thinks online said yesterday? She looks just like her. I mean, she's going to do this at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt like at some point, no matter what was going to happen here in the, when you look at the trajectory of Mackenzie Schirilla, if this wasn't what landed her in prison, something else would. It was a matter of who and what were going to be her victims as the human tornado that that she is. Fascinating to get your insight on. I've been watching your tweets about it this week, so I'm glad we got a chance to discuss. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.